and we had another lady bringing us flowers and sweets only yesterday, and her card was really thoughtful. She said, "Thank you for being early adopters of technology out in the bush. We are very proud of our local pharmacy and thank you sincerely for taking care of us through COVID and day in, day out." So, I mean, she reflects back on COVID even now, a couple of years later. So I think it was very impactful what pharmacy did during COVID. Hi, I'm Karen Carter, proprietor of Narrabri Pharmacy and Excellence in Professional Innovation category winner, and you're listening to the Guild Dispensary Podcast.
Welcome to the Guild Dispensary, the pharmacy podcast where we dispense the latest news and updates from the Guild, and you get to hear from industry experts on business and pharmacy-related topics.
Today we are joined by the Excellence in Professional Innovation winner at Guild Pharmacy of the Year, Karen Carter from Narrabri Pharmacy. We'll be delving into their journey from overcoming workforce challenges to improving and implementing new services. Together, we'll uncover the strategies driving positive change and enhancing well-being in their community, and we'll see exactly what secured them the win.
First up, it's time for What You May Have Missed, where we catch up on the latest news from the Guild. In the fast-paced world of pharmacy, it's easy to overlook some key updates. So let's dive in and make sure you're up to speed.
2025 Commonwealth Budget. Last week's Commonwealth Budget has confirmed the 8 CPA Heads of Agreement investment of an additional $3 billion in community pharmacy and cheaper medicines above existing projections. This investment includes additional dispensing revenue, new funding for community pharmacy programs, and a temporary freezing of co-payments and phased replacement of the discretionary $1 co-payment discount with a government-funded discount for all patients. There are a number of measures negotiated as part of the 8 CPA and agreed in the Heads of Agreement, signed by the Guild and the Commonwealth Government on the 13th of March 2024, including co-payments and $1 discount, dose administration aids, and finalisation of the 8 CPA. Co-payments and $1 discount. At a cost of $318 million over the Ford estimates and an additional $166.4 million in 2028-29, the Commonwealth Government will temporarily freeze, not subject to annual indexation, both PBS co-payments. The general PBS co-payment will be frozen at $31.60 until the 1st of January 2026. The concessional PBS co-payment will be frozen at $7.70 for up to 5 years. Over the same period, the $1 discretionary discount will be removed. Effectively, by the end of the 8 CPA, all patients will receive a $1 discount funded by the Commonwealth Government instead of community pharmacies. This restores universality to the PBS. The ability for community pharmacies to discount the maximum co-payment will be removed by the National Health Act 1953. Dose administration aids. There will also be an increase in the pharmacy level caps for the dose administration aids program from 60 to 90 per month. This is at a cost to the Commonwealth Government of $151.1 million over 5 years and an additional $45.6 million in 2028-29. Finalisation of the 8 CPA. The balance of the government's $3 billion investment in community pharmacy will be spent on dispensing and community pharmacy programs. The Guild and the government are in the latter stages of finalising the 8 CPA. Scrutiny is being applied to every clause in the agreement to ensure that it delivers a viable and sustainable community pharmacy network in accordance with the Heads of Agreement. Further communication. As soon as final agreement is reached for all clauses in the 8 CPA, the Guild will disclose the agreement to members. The agreement will be further explained in member-only webinars and at the 2024 State of the Industry Roadshow, so please keep an eye on your inbox for those announcements and details. Finally, the Guild has also distributed a special forefront budget edition explaining the 2025 Commonwealth Budget and detailing all budget measures relevant to community pharmacy. Hi, Karen. Good to have you. And of course, congratulations on your category win at Guild Pharmacy of the Year. Very exciting. As the Excellence in Professional Innovation category winner, what has that sort of recognition meant to you? And just as importantly, your team. And do you believe that winning this award has, you know, kind of further validated your efforts and impact in the community?
Oh, thank you, Daniel. Yes, we were so excited to be named a category winner. So being a category winner in Excellence in Professional Innovation has been a humbling experience, as I know there are a lot of great pharmacies and pharmacists in Australia. However, it's been a great recognition for our hardworking team. And We're actually really fully invested in trying to improve the health outcomes in Narrabri. And this is just a bit of recognition for what we've actually been able to deliver. I do think we're appreciated in our community for all of our services we do. Yesterday, I was giving a vaccination to an elderly patient and she was just thanking me for all that we did and our team for her vaccinations, her medication packs, her deliveries and a smiling face with a conversation with her. And we had another lady bringing us flowers and sweets only yesterday and her card was really, really thoughtful. She said, "Thank you for being early adopters of technology out in the bush. We are very proud of our local pharmacy and thank you sincerely for taking care of us through COVID and day in, day out." So, I mean, she reflects back on COVID even now, a couple of years later. So I think it was very impactful what pharmacy did during COVID.
You're preaching to the converted, obviously, when we say things like community pharmacists have a huge impact in their communities and particularly rural communities like yours. You mentioned there a second ago about your hardworking team, and I know from speaking to others that you really do have a fantastic team out there, but a few years ago you did face some very real challenges in attracting pharmacists to your rural area. Give us some insights. What was causing those sorts of challenges and how did you overcome them? Because you're not the only rural pharmacy that faces this challenge.
Absolutely. I think that there are challenges with staff in all areas, but sometimes it's actually getting the right staff for your business mix, and that may be the most challenging thing. We do try and get pharmacy students coming for placements, so we reach out to universities, try and subsidise their accommodation because it's quite expensive to come to placement. We employ pharmacy students in uni breaks, so that's like on just a casual basis. But I guess what we did do a few years ago was we did a refit and put in a rower robot. So this allowed us to free up time for our pharmacists so that they could do, you know, the extended scope of practice. So UTI and oral contraceptive trials, more in sleep apnea screening and trials of CPAP, you know, wound care. And I guess it's sort of set us up for being able to be busy. So, you know, in the last month, you know, with vaccinations and med reviews, that dispensing process is a lot more streamlined. So that allows us to have more time to do these things.
You mentioned wound care just there, and I know that you do provide quite a wide range of services at your pharmacy. So let's start with some things like wound care management and sleep apnea. Talk us through what inspired you to introduce these services and probably others, and what outcomes have you observed since their implementation in terms of not just their impact on the business, but patients as well?
So we basically just looked at our demographics. So we had, you know, your farmers and we have mining in our area now. So, you know, those people just want a quick fix. They don't have time to go and have a lot of appointments. And we do have a doctor shortage as well. So I did look at the compounding track, but thought if I did train a pharmacist or another staff member and they left, then, you know, where would that leave me? So I decided to do a wound care course myself. So I studied the Advanced Diploma of Wound Care through Monash, and then I was able to then bring in the service, teach my pharmacists how to do this. And it's a really rewarding service because, you know, you see a patient, you go along their journey and they improve over time and it heals. So I think that was really exciting. I mean, and the other thing is we just don't look at the hole in the person, and I'm sort of quoting from Jeff Sussman on this one, but we actually look at the whole person. So, you know, nutrition, rest, stress, you know, iron levels, that sort of thing, to just improve their whole body function so that they can have wound healing. And then the sleep apnea service has been another rewarding service. I mean, you know, you've got shift workers. The mines are now doing a lot of health direction for sleep apnea and fatigue management. So we saw this opportunity to have a screening service. And we then, after screening the patient when we get the results. If CPAP trials are required, then we can set them up in the pharmacy. We have a range of different masks to use, and then we just follow them with their journey. We have software so that we can look at what they did overnight. I always sort of joke with them that, you know, we're like Big Brother and we can see what you do when you sleep. And, you know, we can see if they've got mask leaks, you know, if they're using it, if they're not using it, give them a phone call, get them back on track. And, you know, we've had some fantastic positive feedback. One lady, she slept all night and so did her husband because she was the snorer, you know. So it's been really rewarding.
You also provide an Indigenous dose administration aids service, which has allowed you to effectively engage with the First Nations people in your community. Talk to us about how that has helped improve their health outcomes and why you think it is such an important service in the community to take on and provide.
Oh, this is just a great service for First Nations people. So we were actually involved in the Immerse project or study a few years ago, which the Guild conducted, and that's the Indigenous Medication Review Service. And our pharmacists had cultural awareness training, and we could actually see the significant gap of health between First Nations people and other Australians. So I guess it became a passion of mine to try and reduce this gap. And having the free Webster has been just amazing to improve people's compliance. It improves their relationship with us and it also improves their health. However, I'm still also passionate about our rural gap of health. So, you know, doing these services for, you know, all of our community has been fantastic as well. I guess the other thing that we try and do in our pharmacy is that we try and put our hand up for any new research that's going on, because we know that those trials will improve people's health. So we've been involved with an asthma trial, severe mental health. So those sort of trials have led us to be able to bring some new services to our community and try and bridge the gap between our rural and First Nations health and city health as well.
So clearly it's a great service for First Nations people in your community. When you first started offering it, did you find any challenges with engaging that part of the community and getting them to come into the pharmacy?
So I guess we've always had quite a high percentage of First Nations people in our community. So I don't think we've ever had any problems with engaging with them. However, just doing the Immerse project and having that cultural awareness training really highlighted the fact that, you know, there was the person doing the training had been from the Stolen Generation and he was only 5 years younger than me. And I just thought, I went to primary school with you and you were in the Stolen Generation. So it really struck a chord with me that we need to do something to help. But we've also got our 71st First Nations pharmacist working with us as well. So she was an intern. She came for a student placement back a couple of years ago, and then she reached out and asked if she'd like to come back, or we also invited her to come back to do her intern year, and she did that with us. And now she is working with us as well. And that's been fantastic because she really can relate to these people, but also, you know, just talks to them like, you know, they're part of the mob. You know, we asked her one day, oh, where did so-and-so go? And, you know, Kira comes back with, oh, she went walkabout. So, you know, if she can have a joke with it as well, and it is really wonderful to have her with us, and just gives us a bit more perspective in this area as well.
Fantastic. Now, another big thing you've worked on is improving the vaccination uptakes in your community. You have quite a large community of miners and farmers, which, and I know it's a generalisation, but the research tells us that they are less likely to get vaccinated, partly due to their demographics, but also, as you mentioned, like some of them are working shift work and long hours, and it can be hard to make time to go and get vaccinated. What sort of initiatives have you implemented to address that sort of stuff?
We reached out to the mines and they allowed us to come on site to their mines. So in April, we've been having a few early mornings, getting up to be at site at 6 a.m. so that we can, vaccinate those people who are about to start shift or just finish shift, and then they get on the buses to come back to town or they go and do their daily work. So that's been great uptake. We've offered flu vaccine, but also COVID vaccine as well. And, this population also travel. So we also, discuss their travel vaccination needs as well. Not that we give them there, but they can come back into the pharmacy when they are going to travel. So I think, just having the conversation about vaccination and pharmacists doing this service has been, fantastic for this population who normally wouldn't, put their hand up for a vaccination.
A lot of great services and initiatives that you offer there. And of course, with increased scope of practice, the key really is around training and development of staff. How do you ensure that your staff stay updated with the latest advancements and skills required to continue to deliver high quality care to the community?
So our team is very well engaged. So they volunteer to do training when it's released. With the Japanese encephalitis vaccination, that was coming through when Narrabri had quite a few floods and a local horse had actually died from Japanese encephalitis. So we all did the training, and as soon as it was available, we ensured we had our stock from the state vaccine centre and we were ready to go to deliver the service. And this actually eased the minds of our community because, it was November, December, the Mozzies were busy. And so they were able to come into our pharmacy and get vaccinated, and you could just see the sense of relief of that community. We also have a new service of injectable Buvidal, which we implemented about last September. And before that service was implemented, our clients had to come once a month or once every 3 weeks on a specific day to the hospital, and the nurse there would just, do all of the injections. Our local drug and alcohol nurse came to the pharmacy with the clients. She showed our pharmacists how to give the injection. And then now we've got the clients coming in, and they can come in, any day, Monday to Friday. So it just gives a little bit more flexibility, and, they engage with us, we are engaging with them, and I think it's just improved our service. But we also engage with other professional sort of people in our industry. So, we've got Felicity, our accountant from Pitcher Partners, we've got different bank managers, leasing experts, the old chemist golf for networking when we can attend, and our marketing and buying group Instigo, which just helps us with, buying, marketing. So I think it's important that we, engage with experts in their fields, but we also travel to conferences so that we can keep up to date, either with, information or new skills or even just, pharmacy industry updates.
You sound incredibly busy there with lots of work on lots of different fronts. So it's going to be pretty important to have some good business management strategies. And I know that you have things such as regular reviews of financials and benchmarking against other pharmacies. And that clearly demonstrates a proactive approach to ensuring that you're running a pharmacy which is sustainable. What key learnings have you gained from sort of conducting those reviews, and how have they influenced your decision-making process in the pharmacy?
With any service, job satisfaction is important, but also, you have to have a financial reward to, keep the service going. So we review our financials monthly and look at our key departments, which at the moment are wound care and sleep apnea, review sales, costs and marketing. But benchmarking is great to keep you accountable and making sure you're comparable to like pharmacies. And this identifies areas of opportunity, which I may not be as good at. But I've always loved playing sport, so I actually love a healthy competition, so that's why I like benchmarking.
It's clear that your pharmacy is highly valued in your community, and it was great to hear those little stories about some feedback and thank yous that you've gotten from your patients. But I think everyone, no matter the work they do, at some point, everyone has a moment where they wonder if they're doing things right. Because sometimes you don't always get that positive validation back, even when you're doing a good job. Do you have a particularly memorable instance where your efforts have directly impacted someone's health or well-being? And how did it, to you, reinforce the importance of your pharmacy's role in the community?
Look, I have many, but I guess it's hard to find one which was outstanding. But I guess healing a skin tear on this elderly lady who lived by herself, she was taking some methotrexate, so not ideal when you have a wound. And she just came into the pharmacy to try and patch herself up, which they all do because they're quite stoic. And we just engaged with her and got her to come back regularly and change dressings for her. And we actually watched it heal, which was really rewarding. And she actually told the story that she had another wound, which took her like months to heal, whereas this one had only sort of taken about 3 weeks. So she was really grateful. And, you know, it improved our relationship with her. But I think also she, you know, told some friends because we had quite a few more that we were dealing with skin tears.
A big part of a community pharmacy is obviously the community. How do you leverage things like social media platforms like Facebook and Instagram to help promote health initiatives and engage with your community? And do you have any insights or help or advice or strategies that have worked particularly well for you?
So we try and post daily on our social media. We sort of sit down and do a week at a time. And we use health calendars, we use our marketing calendar, local events, and we also use our team to help engage. So, you know, often it's one of our team members is in the post, even if it's saying, hey, we're open today, you know, it's just doing those sort of engagement pieces. But you know, running competitions. So we've got one for, you know, best mum, or when the kids do a colouring in competition, putting the winners on the social media. But we also every year put a rural video into the APP competition. And this actually helps us to promote our pharmacy as well. So we use that on Facebook and Instagram as well.
Very good. Now, Karen, looking towards the future, what are some, if you can fit any more in, upcoming initiatives or services that you're excited to introduce to further enhance the health and well-being of your community?
So we're looking at the NDIS and looking at being able to do that through our pharmacy. I think we just want to be able to communicate with our patients a little bit better. So, you know, through a text message follow-up service, especially with the UTI trial, making sure that they can you know, give us feedback if things aren't going so well. Probably trying to improve some efficiencies with our buying. So, you know, we're using a platform called Buy It Right. Another exciting initiative, I think, is trying to improve the data collection for a patient. So, you know, we have a place where we can put notes about their wound care or notes about their sleep apnea. So trying to get sort of one platform for that. Then our, obviously, you know, looking over the Queensland border to that expanded scope. So looking forward to the skin conditions for New South Wales and, you know, maybe more travel vaccines. So I think the future is looking bright and I look forward to, you know, extending our scope.
Okay, Karen, just before we round this up, I thought it'd be great just to sort of go back around and revisit that point about attracting people to work in a rural setting. And so for those listening who are thinking or maybe one day they're going to think about working in a rural pharmacy setting, what do you think the best part of living and working in a rural community is?
I think the best thing is that you get to know your patients really well. You get to see the different generations, but also you can identify what they may need. And a lot of rural patients don't really want to, you know, travel for lots of things. So I think if you can bring a service back to your community so that they can do it at home, you know, or, you know, in their hometown, then that's really exciting. So for anyone wanting to looking to working rurally, I think it's really rewarding because you can do a lot of these services and people do really appreciate it. So it's not just, you know, you're another number, you know, we have really meaningful relationships with our patients and I think, you know, make a little bit of a difference to their health.
Excellent. Make some very good points there. Karen Carter, proprietor of Narrabri Pharmacy and winner of the Excellence in Professional Innovation category in the Guild Pharmacy of the Year Awards. Thank you so much for coming on the show and spending some time with us and providing some insights into your award-winning pharmacy.
Oh, thank you very much, Daniel. And I think the Guild Pharmacy of the Year has been an amazing experience. And I encourage pharmacists to showcase their team and their pharmacy unit.
Next up, it's Policy Corner, where we dive into the policy world of the Guild's latest submissions. Whether it's an update on an existing proposal or a brand new initiative, these submissions have the potential to shape the landscape of pharmacy.
Joining us now for Policy Corner is Scott Harris, Director of Workplace Relations and Business at the Pharmacy Guild of Australia. Scott, welcome back. I hope you've been well. Now, with the introduction of legislation, as we've previously discussed, we thought it might be a good chance to catch up again and zero in and chat about what are the current changes that will be specifically impacting on the Pharmacy Industry Award.
Daniel, thank you for the opportunity to come and talk to you again. Yeah, it's been a very hectic period of time with all the legislation changes going through. Now we're actually getting into the really practical side of the game is where we're actually making changes to the Pharmacy Industry Award, and that's what we're going to talk about. And some of those changes and their impact on the workplace. I'll run into the couple of major ones that we've just got coming down the line now, and we're working with the Fair Work Commission on this at the moment, the Pharmacy Guild, is the terms that of three things that occur or happen by August this year. There's a couple of major ones. First one is introduction of what we talked about previously, the delegates' rights into the award. Another one that's coming in is the right to disconnect, which the media's had a nice field day with, talking to everybody about. There's two other ones that are coming down at the same time, and they're both to do with what is normally happening this year, is the minimum wage review undertaken by the Fair Work Commission. We're involved in that. We talk with the Commission about what would be the most economical and most efficient possible way, increase of the minimum safety net wages. And there is one they've been talking about for a little while now is what's been called the pay equity case. However, the first thing that's going to come down to people using the Pharmacy Industry Award is what is the delegates' rights. It's an interesting term. It's talking about allowing people in the workplace who may be covered by an award or have coverage and have coverage as a union member, where they actually can represent the rights of people who are union members or are eligible to become union members in the workplace. They're not a union official. They are still an employee of the organisation or the business itself. However, they're undertaking a delegate's rights on helping the person who may need assistance in a particular matter that's happening in the workplace. It's a different thought. It's going to be challenging for a lot of businesses, employers and employees to understand what this delegate rights are, what they're entitled to, and how it can help the workplace work more efficiently, functionally, improve communications within the workplace, and look at what are the entitlements and rights within the workplace too at the same time. We're still discussing with the Fair Work Commission at the moment, it's going through the normal consultation process of where a model clause is being developed. Now, when we talk about a model clause, it says it's a clause that applies equally to all awards. Some awards will make variations after that for specific industries, but I don't see we will need to do anything for the Pharmacy Industry Award.
Just circling back around to those delegates' rights, what you explained there makes sense. Is there anything that will be specific to community pharmacy in terms of impacts, or is it pretty stock standard, broad, vanilla?
I'll go on the first part. It's stock standard vanilla across everybody. There's one major point here that all employers need to consider, and that is, as a part of this introduction of the delegate rights, which went through closing loopholes legislation, the delegate who's been elected or appointed by the union to act on the behalf is entitled to be absent from the workplace on paid time to undergo training to make sure they're up to speed. There's a boundary line here when we start talking about who's a small business and who isn't a small business. As we said previously, small business, under the definition of the Fair Work Act, is an employer who has 15 or less headcount. If they are that type of organisation, the time away from the workplace to attend the delegates' training is actually unpaid. Where if you've got more than 15 headcount in the workplace, that time is paid. We took that as a little bit difficult to handle because that's going to probably restrict some employers, and we fall a lot of that in the community pharmacy industry, who are on that 15 headcount cusp. And it could be coming down to, do I employ another person or don't I employ? And we find they're struggling. And that's a big impact on somebody looking at their business operations.
Is that headcount full-time equivalent, or is it just if you could have one full-time person and then 14 or 15 part-timers or casuals?
You've just hit on the head, which keeps my game very interesting, being in the workplace relations space and industrial relations, is that interpretation. The Act itself says it's 15 headcount employees, less casuals who aren't working on a regular and systematic basis at a particular time. So it's a fluid. But as we say to members, when we're doing the counting and everything else, the Act tells us very clearly under Section 23 how it is interpreted. We say if a casual is been working on a regular basis, like they're at least doing one day or 2 days a week, they should form, from a risk point of view, a part of the headcount on that side. So FTE, we was previously, go back to 2010, it was FTE, full-time equivalents. But a lot of people struggled with that one on like your 0.25 of an hour, 0.4 of an hour, 0.5, 0.6. How does that all add up? And they have to do a full calculation. And with today's flexibility in the workplace, that's even more fluid now, because 1 week you might be doing your 0.25, but the following week you might be doing 0.4 or 0.5.
So, Scott, considering all of that, is there anything community pharmacy employers need to be doing at the moment, right now, in response to the changes?
Not at this particular moment, but they need to be aware, with effect 1st of July this year, being 2024, this will come into play. They may get requests or brought to attention that somebody may have been elected or has been appointed a delegate in the workplace. But to get that delegate's rights, and we've been talking about it, is they have to get an official letter from the person that they have been appointed in accordance with their union coverage, and they need to recognise that person has got some rights. This is where they can get themselves into problems if they take adverse action or any action against that person because they've exercised that workplace right of being appointed as or elected as a delegate. It's a re-education of the members about what they can and can't do on that particular point, or employers in general.
Well, speaking of education and finding out more, it's a great segue into the final question, which is, for those members who are listening, they need to or want to find out more, what can they do? Where can they go?
At the moment, it isn't on our website. I haven't put it up on the website yet, but coming closer, once we've got the finalisation of the model terms, I'll be writing several articles to go up on the website, and at the same time briefing and talking with all their advisors around Australia, where they just ring the Guild advisory line and have a talk to one of the advisors about what their obligations are and put it into place.
Excellent. Some great insights there. Scott, as always, a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for that, Daniel, and I hope all the listeners have got something out of it.
It's clear that Karen and her team have been focused and busy over the past few years, tackling staffing issues, implementing new services, and adapting the way they provide them to ensure that their community can receive the healthcare they need. Karen and her team are setting the bar high for community pharmacies everywhere, and the win is well deserved. Until next time, I've been your host, Daniel Oyston, and you've been listening to episode 6 of The Guild Dispensary.